Hi, I'm Mark Bubb.
And I'm Jair Briggs Davis.
And we're from Mark and Jair Explain Sports.
This is a tripod production.
The following is a tripod production. Do not attempt to adjust your dial. Mark Bubb and Jair Briggs Davis, two friends growing up in the Big Apple, two friends who became sports writers at the top of their craft. Mark, the assistant sports editor at Drexel University's The Triangle. Jair, the color commentator and reporter at Curry College. On their own, they give their own unique insights. However, together, Mark and Jair explain sports.
Hey everyone, and shout out to all the listeners. This is another episode of Mark and Jair Explain Sports. Actually, it is episode 8. So far today, I'm with my associate, Mark Bubb. Mark Bubb, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, Jair. You know, the last few weeks, every time we do this, it's like, oh, same old. But this week, we have some improvements in, when it comes to professional sports. First of all, we have the NHL. I know we haven't talked a lot of hockey, but this is exciting. If they do come back, which wouldn't be before at least July, it would be playoffs only and involve 24 teams. So that could be pretty interesting. What do you think of that?
Well, Mark, it has me very excited. 24 teams in two hub cities, I believe. And it's just, it's good for hockey. And it shows that we're making some progression with professional sports. And even the NBA, they're trying to take steps to move forward and finish out their seasons.
The thing I hate about this stuff, though, man, is like, yes, there's all every day there's something. Oh, MLB are in talks to do this. Oh, NBA is in talks to do this. But it's never, they have a set plan. It's rumor, because there is a report out that the NFL was going to have mini camps starting mid-June. And then, like, an hour later, there's like, oh, well, there has been no discussion. There's been no decision yet. So I don't know what that, like, it's an, There's not a lot of hope in this as it is with the whole COVID, but I feel like the league is making it a lot more difficult with, like, they seem very indecisive of what they're going to do. And I feel like they shouldn't keep reporting stuff if there's not a set plan. It's just getting people's hopes up. And that's what kind of, like, yes, there's a lot of positivity in this new news, but there's still no set plan. So I'm not believing that it's coming back until I actually see it.
I agree with you, Mark, but, you know, everyone is anticipating sports coming back so much, and they're foaming out the mouths, just waiting and just itching for something to come into fruition, and everyone's just so hopeful of a chance just to finish out the seasons. So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too. Like, if they do come back, well, I like the NHL's plan, if that's what they're actually going to do, that they'll go right into the playoffs, because we were so far into basketball season that we were like 2 weeks away from the playoffs once everything shut down. So if you do bring all the teams back, what, you're going to have the Hawks, who clearly aren't going to be in the playoffs, play five games and that's it, and then they're done? Like, I feel like that gives a high risk of injury to only play five games and come back. It makes more sense to just go straight to the playoffs and have like a 3-week training camp.
I think it makes sense just to start the playoffs. You know, I know Damian Lillard, he spoke against like coming back if his team is probably already out of the playoffs. You know, it makes no sense to have players on teams who are not between like 1 through even 9 or 10 potentially just coming back and risking it all with COVID going around. So I think that the playoffs should just start if there's a restart, and you know, you move forward to either the NBA championship or to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, I mean, it should be the only one where I think that all these leagues don't know exactly what they're doing. But to me, it seems that the NFL and the MLB have it the easiest. Well, not the easiest, but they have more opportunity to be complex, because their season both of the seasons didn't even start yet. So they could delay it, and to make a more set plan to make sure they're as cautious as possible. Whereas You have the MLB, where you have not the MLB, where you have the NBA and NHL, where they're so far into the season that you can't just like restart, you know, because half 75% or whatever it was is already done. So you have to go based off that, and it gets really complicated.
I agree, so Mark. I just think that, well, as I said, just full steam ahead, just power through the playoffs, and then it's over. And then as for the 2020-2021 seasons for both the NHL and NBA, maybe they could start, I'll say, a month later than where the season usually starts, or they should probably trim down the season, as in, like, reduce games. But, you know, I have to give a lot of credit to Gary Bettman, Adam Silver, and a lot of players in the NBA and even the NHL and in trying to find a way to make progression. You know, you got to try to put your foot down and try to
full steam. I know we're going to get a little more into it once we have our guest on today. But speaking about the MLB, what do you make of the possibility that the highest paid players will have to take a 60% pay cut? So you'll have guys like Gerrit Cole going from $36 million to $8 million. I personally would say, hell no, I'm not playing. I signed a contract for that certain amount of money, so I'm not playing until I get that money, because that's not fair. Like, yes, it's terrible that this whole situation is going on, but you still signed a contract for that money, so therefore you should receive it. And it was fully guaranteed. So now he's just going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to take a lot less. How's that fair?
Well, Mark, in March, I believe it was, when things were turning upside down in the world of sports, I believe there was already an agreement between players and owners about taking a pay cut already, and now the owners are asking them to take another pay cut.
Yeah, maybe like from $36 million to like $28 or $25, but there's a big difference on that and going from $36 million to $8 million. That's a $18 million difference.
Well, it's a difference, Mark. I understand, like, you know, the frustration, but
my math is terrible. That's a $28 million difference.
Well, Mark. But I mean, either ways, like, my opinion about it is that I understand the frustration. I get it, but at the same time, I feel like the owners should probably try to find a way to add a little bit more money towards the players if they can, or I'm wondering, could they even backload certain contracts?
Right. Well, before we take a deeper dive into the MLB situation, I would like to introduce our guest today. It's not going to be who I mentioned last week, Scott Sadin, the CEO of US Integrity Sports. He will be joining us next week, but this week we have our friend Dave Barrett, who lives in Colorado and is an avid sports fan. We would like to hear from him, what he has to say on certain topics. Dave, thanks for joining us today, man.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
So, Dave, what are your opinions when it comes down to Major League Baseball players and the pay cuts that they can potentially take?
Well, I'm definitely dying without having any sports to watch. I'm getting desperate enough for gambling that I'm finding myself trying to gamble on, like, cooking competition shows, which is a new low point for me. But as much as I do want sports to come back, I think I ultimately probably side with the players just from a labor perspective. They do have contracts written, and if they start allowing this precedent to be set where the contract is voided just out of inconvenience and the owners can suddenly pay them something different than what the terms were agreed to, I think that's a dangerous precedent moving forward for owners to maybe no longer honor those contracts. Because at the end of the day, when you look at the MLB, I think that the players' union has been the most powerful of all of the four major sports, maybe rivaled by the NBA, but guaranteed contracts and a pretty good distribution of wealth among all the players. I think that those are things that the union has fought for. And the minute you start allowing contracts to be renegotiated or cut down, no matter the circumstances, I think that is dangerous for the players as they move ahead.
So Dave, you talked about gambling. Our guest next week works with a lot of gambling and like regulating it, and like is curious how people like us gamble and like what their interests are. So You said you were even betting on cooking challenges?
You know, just I'm getting desperate over here. It's a dark times out in sports. But the way I always look at it is I feel like gambling is no different than investing in the stock market. We use a different word. Because ultimately, when you put money into a stock, if you put money into Apple today, you're gambling that Apple's going to go up tomorrow. If it doesn't go up, you lost money, and like that sucks. Mm-hmm. Same thing if you're gambling on a college football game or if you're gambling on a baseball game. I think that Noah Syndergaard's only going to give up 2.5 runs today. Well, if he gives up 3 runs, then you lost money. That sucks. But you don't know, right? You can use all this information that you know based on what you've watched. Who's he playing against? What's his righty-lefty split? And how does he fare against those guys? Like, what's the lineup looking like that he's playing? Is it a day game versus a night game? There's all this information that if you're really an avid sports gambler, you can use to make the best, like, educated guess. But ultimately, it is just a guess that you're going off of. And so I always feel like people that criticize people that gamble on sports don't really understand how close it is to putting money into something like the stock market. And so my rule of thumb is usually only gamble on things that you really know. You know, sometimes I'll say screw it and I'll just throw money on something that I just need something to watch or whatever. But most of the time I focus on the sports that I follow really closely, and even in those sports, the teams that I know the best, because I feel like it gives me the best chance to win.
Definitely. So those of you, most of you don't know this, but Dave actually is the commissioner of my fantasy football league that I'm in. But most of his childhood friends and some of our mutual friends are in it. And I've been in this league for, I think, over 5 years, and I've never won, unfortunately, but Dave has. And me and Dave actually kind of partner up when we play during the season, because a lot of the other people, they like to collude with each other. So Dave, what's it like being the commissioner of a league and dealing with this collusion?
You know, being commissioner of a competitive fantasy league, I think, is a very thankless job, because the minute something doesn't go well for a team, you know, it's very easy to blame the commissioner and to blame the rules or the policies that are in place, whether it's the waiver period or the way that the waiver wire rules are set, or how do you pick the draft order. There's always ways that's like, this is rigged, this is whatever, whatever, whatever. So I'm used to the criticism after 5 or 6 years of doing it all. Because I think ultimately the best fantasy football leagues, you need two different things. The first thing you need is you need competition and engagement, right? We've all probably been in a league before that people kind of drop out after a few weeks or lose interest, or they...
You know, ones where they draft each in the first round?
Yeah, or they draft players that are retired, which definitely happened in one of our baseball leagues one time, that we're like, why did you just draft CC Sabathia? He's literally not playing anymore. And so that always kind of kills the vibe, because if you're trying to play and like have fun with it, it's not fun when you're going up against people that don't care or aren't paying attention or anything like that. So I think having people engaged and like knowing what's going on, responding to trades, even if it's just to decline them all, making moves on the waivers, like that's always necessary for a good league. But the other thing that you need in a good league, I think, the leagues that we all have the most fun in, is really good trash talk. Mm-hmm. Which is often the result of like knowing people really well, because I'm talking like grimy, personal, horrific stuff that you never want your significant other to see, because they'd probably leave you. It's like, that's the kind of stuff that is fair game. Everything goes on the message boards, like all that stuff. So I feel like as long as people are engaged and people are willing to talk trash about literally everything in your life, then you probably got a pretty good fantasy football league.
Yeah, like especially our league, I think there should be like a disclaimer warning before joining the league. Like, if you're joining this league, I hope you know that you're going to get attacked personally. You're going to have to deal
with it. And luckily for that one, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it sounds like some Michael Jordan style trash talk right there.
And it's super easy to do that trash talk when you know them also. Like, I've joined other leagues where I only knew one or two other guys.
And when you're behind the
keeper, I feel kind of awkward. Yeah, it's like kind of awkward to tell somebody to go fuck themselves. Can you sign this? Oh, well, I just did.
Okay.
It's kind of awkward to tell somebody to do that when you like don't know who they are. Like, what if that's like, you know, like a dad? I'm like, oh, sorry, man. Like, that was awkward.
Yeah.
But like, I know my friends, so I'm like, whatever. I'll make fun of that really horrific mistake you made when you were 16.
Yeah, it's all about getting an edge in fantasy football. Dave, I also know that you're super into college football, as you attended Penn State. So me and Jair haven't really talked a lot about college football this year. We talked a little about the draft, but as far as like next year, if we do have a season, do you think it's just going to be Clemson and Alabama in the finals, in the championship game, or do you think we're going to maybe see a different four teams than we usually do?
I think, first of all, I really hope that there is a season. Although on the flip side, as a college sports fan, anyone that's ever been to a D1 college athletic event knows that a situation like that without fans, like a rivalry game without fans, is one of the weirdest sporting events I could probably imagine. I think that that type of college game would be the most affected by having no fans in the stadium. Baseball, you know, might feel awkward, but they could pump some noise in or whatever on a broadcast. But football, college football in particular, like you're talking, you know, LSU, Bama, like how are you not going to have fans in there screaming their heads off, fighting each other? You know, that's kind of like a part of the experience there. So I hope that they have it come back just because I miss it and I love it. But I wonder what it's going to look like. But I do think Alabama, I think, is always just their recruiting class, and Clemson both. They always get the top five stars. They always have the most numbers of five-star recruits coming in. So their ability to just cycle through talent left and right, when you look at the number of guys that get drafted out of both of those teams. And Clemson, I think, has a particular edge because usually they have a huge turnover on both sides of the football, but with Trevor Lawrence coming back, I think they're in great shape, and they have ATN, their running backs, coming back as well, and so they really only lost one or two first-round talents this year. So I think with that many veterans coming back with that much experience, they're going to be quite the force to be reckoned with. Bama, though, I do think has a clear shot to go because LSU, their entire team got drafted in the first round. It was like
got drafted in the
straight up. So that team was incredible. But like, what do they have after that? You know, I don't know much about their backup guys that are younger. Their sophomore is going to have to step up in a big way. And I don't, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see that. Plus, I think that game is actually going to be at Alabama this year. So that's always a tough place to play.
So do you think Penn State is going to be really good this year?
Man, we certainly have the opportunity. It's one of the better teams I've seen out of Penn State in a while. I hesitate to get my hopes up because I feel like James Franklin, their head coach, is always – I can always rely on him for one or two really bad clock mismanagements in the season, and often that results in a loss. I'm not bitter about it at all. But I think we have this one linebacker, Micah Parsons, who's he's one of former five-star, and he's projected in top 10 pick for next year's draft. He was a Buckus Award finalist last year as a sophomore, which is really difficult to do. So I think you add another year of training and experience for him, and he's just going to be on another level, probably one of the better defensive players in the country. The real question is just going to be what our offense looks like. We brought in a new offensive coordinator out of Minnesota, and if you caught any of the Minnesota games last year, they were a high-flying offense. So I'm interested to see what they can do with him and how he gels with our quarterback, Sean Clifford. So
that was impressive. Jair, any questions?
Well, Dave, who is your all-time favorite college football player?
Good one.
Man, so I go back and forth. There's a lot of, like, ways to qualify greatest, you know, like my favorite, I guess. One that's just, like, super important to me as a player for a variety of reasons is Saquon Barkley, partially because he's from New York originally. I love the story that he's got, and his dad was in jail when he was younger, and he's got out, and he reconnected and has been close with his family since then. Obviously, he was a huge force at Penn State. He was one of the first Heisman finalists I saw out of Penn State during my time as a fan. And then beyond that, he got drafted by my favorite football team, the second overall pick. So, like, all of those factors led him to just be, like, this important guy for me. I know he's still young. He's got a lot of years ahead of him, hopefully. But I think I'd probably have to go with Saquon or Trace McSorley, too, that era. That football team in general, they won the 2016 Big Ten Championship, and that team, I don't know how many times I've watched that game. Especially now that I'm desperate during quarantine, I've probably watched it three times. But, I would say anybody on that team, I'm a big fan of.
So, Dave, do you think that the possibility of players to be able to get paid? So now, I don't know if you've heard, but there's, like, the NCAA seems like they're going to be approving, like, how much social media popularity you get. You can maybe make money at, like, a lot of celebrities get money off their social media posts. So I think that the NCAA is going to allow athletes to be able to benefit off their name and likeness. So do you think that's going to affect the performance at all from the players or like the team chemistry? Maybe some guys getting like $50,000 a year and one guy's getting $5,000 a year. So I don't know, maybe that guy's getting $5,000 might get pissed off.
I don't think it will be quite as bad as that, just because, you know, the NCAA coming out and saying, hey, we're going to allow this now is only funny because it's going on anyway. You know, you look at every sport, basketball, how many different accusations that every single major program from UNC, Duke, Kansas, they all get accused of paying their players and shifting money around to pay for this mortgage or to get this car for somebody. And Reggie Bush even had, you know, his Heisman vacated because he eventually got caught. But nobody was complaining at USC, you know, when they were winning the championship, when they were winning Rose Bowls out there. So I think the fact that they're allowing it now might make it more widespread. But I think that college athletes have proven already the ability to do that, you know, on the black market almost, just behind the scenes. So now that you're allowing them to do it just more publicly, I think hopefully it'll be easier for them because they won't have to stress about, you know, quote unquote, getting caught. And especially if it's just something based on their own likeness, like not necessarily the university's paying them a salary or anything. But, it, you know, if you're Trevor Lawrence, like you're objectively one of the most famous guys in college football right now. You look back at some of the popular guys back in the day, Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow, like the country was crazy about them. And the fact that they couldn't go out and make an appearance at a local, you know, memorabilia shop or a local restaurant and get a couple bucks for that, it's kind of crazy because it is their work and their labor, and I feel like they deserve the right to do that. So I hope the implementation goes well, but you never know with college kids because you guys don't always make the right decisions. So who knows?
Yeah, you're right about that. Jared, do you have any last questions for Dave?
Dave, what was your first reaction when you saw Odell Beckham Jr. handing out money to LSU players?
Oh my gosh, I was cracking up. And then the fact that the NCAA came out and had to do an investigation later that week made me laugh even harder because, again, it's like, come on, like, you know what's happening. Like, who cares? Like, just let Odell, classic Odell, you know. I do kind of miss him on the Giants because the Giants are just bad. They're just a bad, bad team now. But maybe I'm happy to not have that distraction.
Definitely.
I got a question for you guys. Oh. There's no sports to be watching right now. I told you I've watched this Penn State Big Ten Championship a couple times. I watched the 1999 and the 2000 Yankees World Series, every game of the series. What else have you guys been watching to pass the time? Have you gone back and rewatched any old sports games?
Yeah, honestly, this is kind of embarrassing, but I started subscribing to the WWE Network, and I've been watching some old, because there's a Last Dance version for The Undertaker called The Last Ride. So I've actually been watching that, if you really want to know.
For myself, I've been I'm thinking of, you know, catching up more with KBO, well, just to see, like, talent over there. And also just been watching a lot of different things on ESPN, like, obviously, The Last Dance. And actually, Dave, for you, I've been watching some reruns of the 2004 Yankees postseason, huh?
I mean, you don't have to bring that up. I was about to ask if you went back and watched the Carlos Beltran at bat in 2007.
You mean 2006?
Oh, but there's a Mets in.
2006. You're right. 2006. Yeah, some games come back on, and I'm like, you know what? I don't need to put myself through this again. I started watching one of them at the 2001 World Series. I was watching Game 7, the Yankees Diamondbacks, and I was like, I'm probably not mad about this anymore. No, I was definitely still very mad, and I turned it off in the middle of the inning. I was like, I know where this ends. I don't need to watch this again. This is stupid.
Well, if the season does come back for baseball, Dave, you're definitely going to have to come back to talk to Jair, especially if the Mets and the Yankees are now in the same division that they're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. We'll have new sports come back. We'll be good to go. Heck yeah.
Dave, we really appreciate you coming on with us. It's great talking to you, man.
Yes, yeah, sir. Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime. Got to play on the track.
Yeah, shout out to Tay on the track. Don't forget to follow us on our social media.
At EX Sports Drexel.
I'm your host, Mark Budd.
And I'm Jared Brooks Davis.
Thanks for listening to us.
To listen to more Tripod Productions, go to thetriangle.org/podcasts.